Hello and welcome in.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Hello and welcome to Science Mixtape with me, Kyle Major. After a somewhat rocky start, we're kicking it off. For so many of us, the experience of wild animals is restricted to what we see through our TV screens and tablets. But there's always been someone on the other side of the camera, someone to bring the ends of the earth into our living rooms and bedsides. My guest today has the envious job of doing just that. Patrick Ayi is a presenter and biologist who's worked up close with cheetahs, elephants, baboons, bears, and even a whale shark, working to bring the natural world to within sight of everyone else, and by the looks of it, having a lot of fun along the way. Welcome, Patrick.
Yeah, what's going on?
Thanks for coming on the show. I assume the first thing everyone asks you is, what is your favorite animal, right?
Yeah,
so I think we're going to leave that to one side, and I'm going to ask, what is the animal that you most underestimated?
Oh, good one. Okay, so it would have to be an animal that we're filming in Colorado. This was a couple of years back. It was for my first series, The Secret Power of Animals, Super Senses. And we were in Colorado. We were next to this live railroad track. And the animal we're trying to find lives in these culverts, in these storm drain pipes. The animal in question, rattlesnake.
And see, that immediately terrifies me.
Yeah, I know. But I was just like, oh, cool, rattlesnakes. Awesome. again, naivety perhaps. But I thought this is going to be really cool. We're going to get up close with these snakes. I think actually, so if I explain, the first day we went out, it was really cold. So obviously, being cold-blooded animals, they were really slow. So actually, I was lying on the ground next to a rattlesnake that was coiled up, and we're there for like half an hour pulling focus and all this kind of stuff. I was like, okay, so these rattlesnakes are quite docile, and they won't attack unless they're provoked. Exactly. Day number two, a lot warmer, but again, my brain hadn't kicked in, and we're like walking along. My producer says, Patrick, we're going to have to do that take again because you look like you really are not scared at all. We're filming rattlesnakes. I was like, well, I'm not going to do it again. This is my genuine reaction. I was right next to one yesterday. It's like, okay, cool. So we filmed it again anyway. It must have been, he must have summoned this snake. It whipped across where we were walking so fast, and literally goosebumps all over my skin. My director actually jumped from beside me and put me in front of where the snake was. So that was the one time I underestimated an animal.
Sounds like you underestimated the director too. He's willing to sacrifice you.
Totally.
Straight up. No questions.
Oh, he's good about that.
That's terrifying. I mean, you've seen so many amazing animals, and we're going to get onto that. But I think first, we're going to have your first song.
Yeah.
And this is Feelings by Shy FX.
Yes.
Is there any reason you chose this?
Yeah, so earlier this summer, I went to Boomtown, the first time I've been there. And this was the opening song that they dropped, and it literally filled me with joy. So I wanted to share it with all of you guys.
So that was Feelings by Shy FX. So, Patrick, I mean, this is really a dream career you've got going on here. How did you get into it? You studied biology initially, right?
Yeah, so I studied, technically the degree is called cancer biology and immunology. A bit of a mouthful. But yeah, for all intents and purposes, it was molecular and cellular biology. I always wanted to know how things worked. I was fascinated by what I would call cool science. Do you remember Tomorrow's World?
I do remember Tomorrow's World. That was a brilliant show.
That was dope.
Yeah.
I love Tomorrow's World, and that's really, I suppose, what got me into loving science. And I suppose, like, TV and, TV presenting and science, that was kind of my first, like, memory of the like the nugget, you know, that kind of inspired me to do what I'm doing now. So yeah, went into science, did that degree, and initially I thought I was gonna work in the lab.
Yeah, don't knock it. It's quite good.
Yeah, you work in the lab, right?
I spend my time doing.
But yeah, I realized that actually I wanted to do something where I was interacting with people a bit more.
Yeah,
and sharing my passion of science, being a bit more of a communicator.
Yeah, and so then you moved to the BBC, or you did some masters first, then you went to the BBC. So how did that start? What did you start doing? Were you making tea and running around?
Yeah, exactly. So I followed that up with a master's in science communication, and at around the same time, I managed to, and this is literally kind of, you know, people talk about luck, and I think what luck really is. It's about putting yourself in the right place at the right time, or preparing yourself such that, you know, you're in control of, say, 1%. I think I'm going to tell this the wrong way around, but
okay.
you can do everything you can to create an opportunity. So you can make that 99% such that when that 1% luck happens, it completes and it goes ahead. So I'd essentially put myself forward for this role, which is as an edit assistant, which is kind of like a runner. It's the technical role, but you start right at the bottom. And it was being run by this media charity. They were looking to place 6 people in 6 different companies. And we started out with 350 applicants. And it got whittled down to the last 6. I made the last 6, and I was fortunate enough to be picked to start working at the BBC. I remember when I got that call, I was in the library, and I literally was just like shaking with joy, because it's so hard to get these jobs. So yeah, that's how I started. Basically right at the bottom, helping out editors. I didn't actually know how to use a Mac. Back then, you know, that was about 10 years ago.
Right.
Not many people use Macs. I got confused with you couldn't right click.
Yeah. That still confuses me.
So I just thought, you know, I'm just going to learn this job. If I can't figure it out, I'm just going to say, look, I'm really sorry. This job's better for someone else. I don't want to, you know.
So then doing for that, you're in this position and you get your big break, which is...
Yeah, it wasn't as straightforward as that. Okay, I'm going to try and tell you the shortened but still detailed version, because I know that a lot of people that are listening right now really do want to know how you get into presenting. Long story short, there is no direct route. You have to be your own. You have to trailblaze. You have to make your own path. For me, I was doing the day job. I was working as an edit assistant. I eventually moved up after about 2 years, became a researcher, which means that you're a bit more involved in the editorial, and slowly worked my way up over the course of 5 years to I was just about to become an assistant producer when I got my big break. But what I was doing before then was putting myself forward for any type of role that would demonstrate my ability to talk on camera or talk on like radio. And essentially it was a lot of, when you're making these wildlife documentaries, the producers and directors will come up with a rough script, and they send that rough cut of the show. Say you're filming Blue Planet, you'll kind of write all the script, consult with Sir David, and the director is the first person to put their voice on these shows, and then they send it to the commissioner, the person that runs the channel, and they decide, okay, actually, you know what, we need to tell that story a bit earlier, or, you know, take that story about the pufferfish later, and let's put the iguanas and the snakes first.
Yeah.
But directors often don't like having their voice on these rough cuts. So I was like, you know, I'll do it. And that gave me, it was like free experience. And again, that goes back to putting yourself forward for any and every opportunity that can highlight your skill. But yeah, eventually I got my big break. It turned out that I found this out 2 years after I started presenting, but it turns out the reason I got my big break and was asked to do a showreel was because the commissioning editor, her name's Kim Schillinglaw, at the time, she'd heard my voice on one of these rough cuts. And she was like, whose voice is that? They're like, it's Patrick. He's a researcher. Like, what does he want to do? I think he wants to be a presenter. Does he have a showreel? No. Can we get one? They're like, okay. And that's literally... At somebody's whim, your whole career can start, and you have no idea how that's happening.
Yeah. So at the time, you weren't aware of that. So you were just like, "What's happening? Someone's suggested I do a show reel. Maybe I'll just do it." So you just kind of went with it. And
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was working very closely with the development team at the BBC NHU. So I was working as crew, but
that's the Natural History Unit.
Yeah. And they make all the wildlife shows for the BBC, Frozen Planet, Blue Planet, Planet Earth, etc. And so they knew I wanted to be a presenter. So we were kind of coming up with a couple of shows. Actually, correction, I managed to help them launch the BBC Earth's YouTube channel, Earth Unplugged. So actually, if you go onto the Earth Unplugged website, you'll see, I think Maddie Moat presents it right now, along with a couple of other people. But I was actually the first person on there, one of the first people, and for doing a show called Zoo La La. So that was kind of like my halfway house. It was, you know, kind of a fledgling platform. But in terms of TV, I was always trying to come up with new ideas with the development team.
So now, the kind of stuff you've been doing recently, you've been doing a lot of big shows. Is there anything, you know, particular that you've enjoyed in recently?
Yeah. A show that I made for Sky TV went out this summer. It was called Big Beasts, Last of the Giants. And it's probably to date the one show that I'm most proud of.
Really? All right. Well, we're going to hold that. Big Beast. We're going to talk about that in a second. And we're actually going to listen to your second song. This is Lil Bebe by Danny Lee.
Yeah.
Any reason for this one? Or just it's like this?
Like, so this Danny Lee is a singer, kind of dancer, follow on Instagram. And she's just got this real cool, smooth style. She's beautiful. She's got an awesome voice. And she's just got that. She just got the sauce, you know?
Well, here's some sauce.
My little baby, change your price tag. There's a hope for you, wanna watch that. Yeah, I'm on work, if you want that. Is your role in? Be precise, yeah.
So that was Danny Lee, Lil Bebe. And we were talking about big beasts. This was something that you were really, really keen on trying. What was it about big beasts that really intrigued you? Or?
So the premise of Big Beasts was, you know, a show to... How can I explain this? We wanted to explain why animals got so big and why they're so important, what the important role they play within the ecosystem. So there's a really cool thesis behind the series. But for me, and this is what I always strive to do in each of the shows that I make, it offered the audience the opportunity to experience these big animals through me. And I think it is important to have a presenter next or some form of host, someone next to these animals, because they are so big. But I mean, when you see lions on TV, you don't necessarily, you know, they're big, but you don't potentially grasp the sheer scale of these animals. Or when you're next to a grizzly bear, for me, the moment that really kind of changed my life really was free diving with a sperm whale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'll say that again. Free diving with a sperm whale. Mind absolutely blown. And I've been doing this for 5 years presenting, 10 years in wildlife TV filmmaking. And yeah, I'm kind of speechless now thinking back to it.
So, how did that happen? How did you get to that moment where you're actually free diving with sperm whale? It sounds ridiculous to say, right?
It does. It's completely ridiculous. So this was kind of one of the things that I really wanted to do was actually to kind of snorkel and swim with orcas. So I've always had this fascination with cetaceans, whales and dolphins, and I thought, wouldn't it be cool to get me next to a whale of some sort. So we settled on the sperm whale because we wanted to tell a particular story about them, which I can go into shortly. And I said, look, I really want to get into the water with these animals. I want to free dive with them. My producers looked at me like I was crazy. They're like, can you really do that? Do you even know how to free dive? I was like, nope, but I'm going to learn. Turns out it was too late to learn how to free dive. Because it was, you can't free dive during the winter months because you have to be outside and it's too cold. So you can't do the breath holds properly. So we went to Reading Pool, this free dive instructor called Emma. I can't remember her last name, but she was awesome. And she taught me all the different breath hold techniques in the pool. I was able to, through static apnea, which is where you stay still, you don't dive. I managed to end up holding my breath for 2 minutes 45 from being able to hold it for 1 minute. This is just in an afternoon with her. So she's really good at kind of, you know, calming you down, teach you the techniques. But the actual diving part is the hardest part. So the first time I'm actually free diving is a shot you see of me going down with this whale. And it's mind-boggling just to be that close to these animals. We were really fortunate enough to be out there. We were in Dominica with a guy called Andrew, I want to say Andrew Armour, and he's kind of dubbed as the whale whisperer. And so he uses this hydrophone. We put this hydrophone into the water, and you can detect the clicks that these whales are making.
They're like vocalizations.
Yeah. So you put the hydrophone into the water, and you kind of spin it around. And it's like, okay, we've got to go east by like 2 miles. So go east for like 2 miles. Put the hydrophone back into the water. He's like, okay, actually, you've got to go slightly north, like, you know, 100 meters or whatever. So 100 meters, like. And then he spins it around, and when the sound is basically coming from all directions, he knows the whales are right beneath us.
Right.
So we wait there. These whales can hold their breath for up to an hour and a half. So you could be waiting a long time, but they tend to come up quite frequently, every like 20 minutes, half an hour. And so we're waiting. And as soon as he hears a...
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's the blowhole. That's the air coming out of one of the blowholes of the whales. So we look around, spot the whale. We start chugging alongside on this boat. Everyone's like, action stations, go, go, go. Patrick, get ready. I get into my, I put my mask on, get the snorkel in my mouth. And meanwhile, this is like, it's hecticness going on around me. Cameraman getting ready. Director's like, Patrick, do you remember this? And during that moment, I'm barely saying anything, kind of focused, like, yes, leave me alone, basically. And then Andrew goes, get into the water. Yeah, I'm like, that's my crappy Caribbean accent. And getting into the water, putting my head beneath the surface of the water, this thing looked like a submarine. Every fiber of my being said, what are you doing? Swim away. But yeah, what an amazing experience. It just, yeah, completely changed my life.
God, it sounds.
I could talk about that for hours.
It's kind of amazing. Mm. Wow. All right. So I think we're going to have to go on to your next track, which we had a little blast of earlier. And it was it's a Shakedown at Night, Peggy Goes Acid Journey remix.
Yes.
So I
actually heard this track a couple of days ago, and I just love my music. I love hearing old school tracks mixed with new school, bit of disco, bit of house, electro, techno, and this just really, yeah, just kind of made me smile.
All right, well, here we go. Great, really enjoyed that. We were bopping along in the studio here.
Yeah.
So we were talking about big beasts, and we had this amazing story that you talk about the sperm whale. And I think this idea that you have of getting personally involved, about you being how people experience these wild animals and stuff, it's really changing now that people there's a lot of social media, that aspect of it. Do you think that like wildlife presenting is changing because people are able to kind of see you all the time, they're able to experience it in real time? Do you think that's really making a change?
Yeah, well, I just Everyone that's listening to this podcast probably can't see this, but I've actually got my Instagram up. I'm live at the moment. I don't usually do this, but I'm giving it a try. But I genuinely feel that social media has the power to connect so many people, and you have the opportunity to reach like genuinely millions of people. And so, you know, the job that I do, kind of traveling the world and seeing all these amazing animals and sharing these stories, I think that there's not, you know, there isn't a platform better suited to doing that. So yeah, I've got a couple of plans in store that is, you know, trying to make the most out of social media and you know, bring I suppose use social media as a window to the wild for people at home.
Yeah, so yeah. Just teasing us there. No, yeah. no further details.
Yeah, that like you got to tease.
So I mean, like we're talking about you do a lot of traveling and that sort of thing. It must be knackering. Is it worth it? You know, are there any points where you're out there doing these things and you're like, oh, I really don't think this is going to be worth it? Or is there always something there which keeps you through? What keeps you through in the hard times?
You know, before I answer that question, I have got a question that's come through.
Oh yeah, go on then. We got something on social media.
What is your favorite bird by Matthias Poyner 18? Peregrine falcon, always, any day.
Peregrine
super
falcon.
Fast, fastest moving animal on the planet. Yeah, they're just deadly and real cool. So yeah.
And they live in London.
You do get them in London, yeah.
Yeah.
They're just fantastic birds. I love predators. Fast predators. That's me.
That's your thing.
Yeah.
Cheetahs.
Cheetahs as well, yeah. Actually, well, that's my top three. Orcas, cheetah, and peregrine falcon.
So yeah. So we did ask you what your favourite animal is in the end.
You
anyway.
Did in the end. Damn it.
No, that's they got right. me. So I mean, yeah, so people are now getting involved. And what I was saying, is it worth the trouble?
So we're talking about making these films, yeah, and the travel involved. So I absolutely love going to each of the different places that we go to. I love going to all the different locations. You meet so many cool people. You get to the experience. It enriches your life, you know, beyond measure. If there's like kind of one piece of advice I'd give to anyone that's listening, if you can travel and see the world, you'll realize how close and similar we are, how wonderfully different and diverse we are as well. And it doesn't have to be to another country. I mean, you can literally travel to Wales and go and explore, you know, take a walk in the Brecon Beacon, see how amazing that is. Go to Cornwall, you know. So travel, see things. But I've got to admit, the physical travel is so draining. And it's something that I don't usually talk about, because you mention it to people and they go, oh, boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And it sounds like you're ungrateful, but I'm a realist. Like, I'm not going to... I was about to swear that. I'm not going to mince my words.
Well done.
But, I mean... it does take it out of you. And I mean, to put it into perspective, I went to Australia twice in the space of, I think, a week or 2 weeks. And you're traveling, but then trying to get over jet lag, tiredness, sickness. But being the person that's in front of the camera, I don't want to let people at home down. So you've got to bring the energy. There's no point in you being there, going there, not really, you know, sharing that, what it's genuinely like to be, you know, sat next to a Komodo dragon,
yeah,
that has like these sharp serrated teeth and could bite you at any moment,
and it wouldn't be pleasant.
So you always got to bring the energy, but I've got to admit, it is draining, just because of the physical travel, and your body is dying. It's freaking draining and tiring, literally. Your like I said, your body is dying on a constant basis, but it's totally worth it. And I love my job. I do.
Brilliant. I mean, I love your job too, and I don't even do it. I just watch it on Instagram.
Constant basis.
When you're making these shows, there's a lot of people involved, right?
Yeah.
Who do you think is like the unsung hero of these documentaries? Is there someone that don't really know? They don't really understand, yeah, the role, but maybe actually they have a massive impact on what eventually happens.
So when you're making a TV show, documentary, it's a team, it's a collaborative affair. It's a whole team. You have people who are sorting out logistics and trying to help out with like booking your flights, your hotels, making sure everybody's safe. How do you, what are the protocols for emergency evac? If something goes wrong, then you've got the editorial team. And I think I would say out of everybody. I would have to say that the unsung heroes are the runners and the researchers. And it depends what production you're in and whether you're doing radio, TV, film. But the runner-researcher role kind of, there's a bit of a blur between the two on occasions. But those two roles, maybe you might say, I'm going to say runner and researcher. They do everything. And actually, I really appreciate having, when you have a good runner or a good researcher that is able to pull out a paper for you. If I'm like, I really want to know who it was that discovered that Komodo dragon's saliva is venomous. I need to know that in the next like half an hour. They'll go away, grab a paper. It's by Brian Fry. He discovered it in 2009. Here's the paper. I'm like, boom, awesome. Then I can read through. Like those are the people that help you do your job.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, I think your next song is Don't Hold Back. So I think maybe we should dedicate this one to all of the unsung runners.
Yeah,
and
to
researchers.
The runners and researchers. Bloco.
Here we go. Researchers launch a new spray-on titanium carbide antenna.
Elon Musk develops new brain...
Neuralink.
Develops Neuralink.
Yeah, awesome. And we read about the Hurricane Florence retrocast.
And exoplanets contain more water than previously thought. I think I got that one good.
We nailed it.
Yeah.
We absolutely nailed it. What a great intro.
That was probably the most shocking kind of news bulletin that I've ever done in my life.
It's fine. It's fine. I think it works. I think we've done well. All right, so I'm gonna talk about the spray-on titanium carbide antenna first. Right. So this is really cool, right? So these are researchers just published in Science at Drexel University in Philadelphia. They created these... like antennas that are sprayed on. So they create a liquid that has inside it has tiny little like nanometer sized films of silicon carbide, and then they put it into a spray bottle over a mask and they spray it on and then coat it. But it's so thin that you can see through it. And so the idea is that like this is a new kind of antenna that people will develop for stuff like wearable electronics, and it can start reading things that you can see transparently, so like transparent screens that have antennas on them, so that you pick up your what looks like a sheet of flexible plastic, you wave it against your thing, it uploads the news for the day, and then you get your transparent. So this is like kind of a small thing, but actually really integral to making really new cool science.
Can I stop you there and ask you a question?
Sure.
So they've developed this type of antenna.
Yeah.
That's see-through.
Yes. Yeah, so what they've developed is like an ink that contains something so that when you spray it on, you can make an antenna out of the ink. But it's so thin that it's transparent. You see through it. But it still receives like radio waves and communication. So it can interact with Bluetooth, or it can interact with Wi-Fi or something like that.
That's pretty cool. So you can basically, so if we're looking at our screens on our phones.
Yeah.
You could make the screen part of the antenna as well, so you could potentially get better signal from a component which otherwise wasn't being used in that fashion.
It's these kind of like little discoveries which are just I love those.
Do you know what they're going to be using it for?
Have they? I don't know. So this has only just been published was published in the 21st September. Mm. So
New science.
New science indeed. New science. All right. So talking about like the future, yeah. We're talking about Elon Musk's Neuralink.
Right. I completely messed up that bulletin.
It's all good. I would mess up because it's kind of terrifying.
It is.
But also amazing.
It is. So basically I was on the airport coming back from Singapore recently, and I was listening to, I think it was Joe Rogan, one of Joe Rogan's podcasts, and he had...
Yeah, great podcast.
Yeah, really, really good. And he had Elon Musk on the show. And they were talking about all sorts of different things. Particularly, it was focused around AI, artificial intelligence, and... Actually, Elon Musk said that he's, of all the things, concerns he has, AI is at the top of his list, which for most of us is probably a bit far-fetched to think that AI could be around the corner. But, I mean, I take Elon Musk very seriously. He's like, I'm going to set up my own, you know, space company. Done.
Yeah.
Elon Musk is so prolific, and I love the fact that when he sets his mind on a task, he does it. Anyway, so he was talking about AI and actually how AI might interact with human beings. And he was talking about the fact that the way that we interact with our phones and with the internet and social media, all these different platforms, he described it in as almost like a cybernetic organism interaction. But the only reason why we don't really perceive that as such is because the bandwidth between us, the human beings, and the phone, the interface, is really slow. So, yeah. You know, you got to type it in with your thumbs, or, you know, read it, or you talk, or whatever, but it's actually a very slow throughput. So if you are able to increase that bandwidth, then we might be able to really perceive that we are kind of interacting with a cybernetic world, or with this AI. And something he's developing, he literally said it right at the end of the podcast, is this thing called Neuralink, and it's a way of connecting the brain to a computer, to put it frankly. And I think that's incredible. A bit scary, but I don't know, it's yeah. Really interesting.
And it brings up all these questions of like what it means to be human. Mm. Like, you know, if everyone's interfacing with one another, and it's kind of like, oh, well, you stop being just one human now, and you're actually physically connected to other. It brings in all sorts of amazing questions.
Yeah,
but
cool.
I'm glad he's working on it.
Well, he says that it's called Neuralink. So if you listen to this, type in Neuralink, and there's some information out there. He thinks that they're gonna make an announcement in the next couple of weeks, couple of months, of a working model.
Right.
So this, I've got goosebumps right now, because potentially by the end of 2018, we're going to see
the first cyborgs.
Well, your Terminator.
Yeah.
Right the corner.
Oh my God. So the one thing that I saw, which I was quite amazed at, is this guy who was doing these it's not really a forecast, but it's like a inverse forecast of Hurricane Florence in America, which devastated, I think there's something like 42 deaths that have been attributed to it so far. And so there was a guy who's doing some research. His name's Kevin Reed from Stony Brook University. And he was doing a forecast of Hurricane Florence if climate change didn't exist. So if human-influenced climate change wasn't there, the numbers in the atmosphere would be slightly different. So then he ran the model from the starting point of the hurricane and saw, okay, how severe is it? How much trouble do you get? And found that it would be much, much less severe. The dangerous extreme weather would have been significantly decreased. And so this is kind of this first, almost in real time, he did this, you know, as the hurricane was making landfall, was publishing, saying, look, if we hadn't changed the climate thus far, this would have been much, much less severe. And it's kind of amazing that right now we're actually seeing these really, really severe effects of climate change. And so I thought that was a really interesting study that like really brought to life the kind of problems that we're having at the moment.
Yeah, I was actually listening to one of your other earlier podcasts. I can't remember who you were talking to, but it was about the difference between weather and climate change.
Yeah.
So weather, if I've got this right, which is kind of short-term changes.
Yeah.
Whereas climate, the change in climate, is over a longer period of time.
Yeah. If you think about the looking at like a sound waveform, like going up and down, the upward and down bit, that's the weather. But the where the line goes, if it's drifting up or drifting down, that's climate.
That's climate.
That's
yeah.
the way I think about it.
But it was really nice what you guys said, how you described it, actually, which was the looking at climate change in terms of probability, likelihood of, you know, of this storm being bigger or smaller. So, I think it's definitely something which is on the minds of many. Maybe not the guy with the orange face. That
we don't mention him on this podcast.
We're not going to say the
team. No, we're going to move on to the next song. Okay. It's done. Right. So next we've got "Man Don't Care" by JME and Giggs.
Yeah.
Any particular reason or
"Man Don't Care" about all that? So this is a shout out to the UK scene. Like, UK grime has completely exploded over the last couple of years. I remember it was my sister that was into grime, and I was like, what's all that nonsense? And then I slowly started getting into it, and I was like, yeah, actually, this is so good. So, this is a real, like, heavy, kind of grimy track, but shout out to the UK scene.
But I don't ski, but I snowboard, dash an MC off peak. Rough. If one of you try to violate me, you get a punch in the face in my front door key. Yes. Punch in the neck with my back door key. Yes. Boxing them out with my X6 key. Boxing the eye with a fob I use to log into my HSBC. Talk about banks, kill them with peas. Run up in your girl's house with two of my G's. Get the money out, put the money in his mouth, then suffocate man with a bat.
So, Patrick, that was "Man Don't Care" with JME and Giggs.
Yeah.
Now, we're gonna talk about something which I really wanted to ask you, which is that... there's been a lot of stuff recently about the role of plastic in our lives, and actually there's been a change, legislation, that sort of thing that's been brought in that was actually kind of came out of Blue Planet 2. It came out of documentaries. And you've been involved a little bit with Oceana kind of doing similar stuff. Is that something that you're really excited about, and what's going on with that?
Yeah, totally. So kind of expanding what I'm doing. I love TV presenting. I'll do it till the day I die. But it's really nice to be able to work and collaborate with other people. And actually, early this year, I got an email from one of the communications officers from this charity, Oceana Europe, saying, "Hey, Patrick, we love what you're doing. Would you like to collaborate on some stuff? Let's start by having a chat." And you know, that was perfect timing for me because I just finished filming and I wanted to. I was looking to kind of, you know, spread my wings and do something slightly different. Anyway, we had a chat. I had a chat with the Oceana guys and gals, and turns out they are doing some really awesome stuff. They're one of, if not the biggest, ocean advocacy group in the world. And it turned out they've got these expeditions that they embark on each year. It's usually either one or two. So they're not just a charity. They don't just raise money and raise awareness. They actually go out into the field to collect real-time scientific data. And so I was fortunate enough to join them on one of their trips, which was to the Aeolian Islands. Got there in the end. Which is just off the coast of Sicily. So yeah,
nice.
Yeah, beautiful.
Very nice place to just go and to go and work like that.
Yeah, exactly. I like to choose my locations wisely, don't I? But yeah, they are doing some amazing work, and I was documenting what they were doing out there, which was essentially monitoring deep sea locations to figure out if there are any protected species such that they can recommend to the Italian government, hey, look, these areas, these deep sea areas, which are usually there's very little data or research on them, these areas need to be set aside as marine protected areas. So I know we're running short on time, but that's essentially what they were doing out there. Funnily enough, actually, whilst we were filming, we saw something in the water, and I thought it was a jellyfish. So the boat was kind of maneuvering the catamaran such that we could get a closer look. And they were like all talking. They got like this hook. I'm like, what are they doing? Why are they taking this jellyfish out of the water? Hooked this thing. Turned out it wasn't a jellyfish. it was a bundle of fishing wire. And this fishing wire, at first I thought it had, you know, fallen off the side. But then if you we look closely, it was like bundled up. It had like a plastic bag tied on it. And we pulled it on. I was so confused. I was like, why would a fisherman or, you know, someone that works in the fishing industry, why would they discard a used fishing line into the sea? Why wouldn't they discard of it properly? So that was kind of shocking to realize that actually, you know, this conversation about plastics and about the health of the ocean it's not just about educating ourselves as a general public. It's also about educating the people that actually work on the seas and in the ocean. I think, you know, the fight against plastics is a real one, and I'm so glad it's finally in the public eye. This is something I've been quite passionate about for years. You know, I love recycling. I think it's, you know, the first thing that everybody can do is recycle. It's actually reduce, reuse, recycle. So if you do any one of those three things when it comes to plastics and just in general, any type of material, then I think we're doing well. But yeah, I think you know what I'd really love to see? The government completely ban non-degradable plastics.
Yeah.
Where possible.
You know, yeah, I mean, so one thing that I really like is you can get these plastics now which do degrade. You heat treat them and then they can completely compost. So maybe let's move towards that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad just getting involved and getting people involved in this kind of stuff. How can people follow along with you, get in touch, keep listening to what you're doing?
So you can follow me, Patrick_ARYEE. And that is me on my Instagram. So I share a lot of my stories, whether it's just kind of like my personal day-to-day journey or actually when I'm traveling to each of these different locations, when I see these incredible animals, meet these dedicated people that are dedicating their lives to become conservationists and look after orangutans and rainforests.
Brilliant. I mean, yeah. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us on
the
show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks you, the guys listening, for joining me. I've been Kyle Major. You've been listening to Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. You may as well be listening to the podcast version of our show. Either way, just get in touch. All of the social channels, we're at Science Mixtape. We always love to hear your feedback. Let us know what you think, what you want to hear more of. Thanks again, Patrick Ayu, and let's play out on your last track. You've
nice
chosen
one.
In My Feelings, Drake. Any
yeah.
reason?
Yeah. So I was listening to this way before people actually caught on to it. There's a guy called Shiggy Show who's done a dance, and that went viral. I was watching it about a month before it kicked off. But it's just a real good feel song. Everybody's going to love this one.
Brilliant. Thanks, and goodbye.
Trap money, penny. Got me in my feelings. Gotta be real with you. Yeah. Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never ever leave from beside me. Cause I want you and I need you. And I'm down for you always. KB, do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never ever leave from beside me. Cause I want you and I need you. And I'm down for you always. Look, the new me is really still the real me. I swear you gotta feel me before they try and kill me. They gotta make some choices, they running out of options. Cause I've been going off and they don't know when to stop. And when you get to top and I see that you've been learning. And when you get to shopping, you spend it like